sweet for my sweet, sugar for my honey, hook for a hand, coat full of bees. Oh yeah! Welcome to the Bitter End Podcast with me, Tom Denny.
And me, Todd Jordan. And it was just so lovely to be serenaded by my friend with a song about bees that neither of us can remember whether or not we've done that joke before. Because, listeners, we failed to do the entire season in one day. Turns out that my appetite for Candyman extends to about two movies in a row back to back.
You don't want to get a cavity off of all that sweet, sweet candy. But we're back now. We're Candyman back. 3.
Day of the Dead.
Sorry, Day of the Dead.
This movie from 1999, from the looks of the trailer, is something of a spicy meatball. We have our leading lady, a lady by the name of Donna Derrico.
I do not know of her work.
No, neither do I, but she's very prominently featured in the trailer and has a real sort of pair of lungs on her. She's very sort of screamy. So I think I've worked out why she was cast. Yeah. So the year before this movie came out, she completed a 3-year run on Baywatch as a recurring character called Donna Marco. I've never seen Baywatch. This might be one of the main babes.
Right, okay, yes. Well, that would make sense.
Unfortunately, I do not feel like Candyman 3 is going to be the launch pad for her great acting career thenceforth, because afterwards she did not work for 3 more years, and when she did, it was in Austin Powers' Goldmember.
Oh, God.
Playing a character called Female Vendor.
Oh, no. I mean, maybe she was... They put a lot of cameos in there. So maybe at the time, that female vendor was a recognisable character cameo.
Yeah, a callback to, you know, the role she played in Candyman 3.
Yeah, exactly. You know, Christian Slater was in one of those Austin Powers films. He was like, I've got you some lemon sherbet.
I remember.
Those were films that we will not cover on this podcast.
No. Now, Thomas, we're covering instead Candyman Day of the Dead.
Yes.
Now, what do you feel? What do you feel about it? What are you anticipating?
I mean, well, the trailer looked 90s as hell. You know, there was a kind of like funky techno music playing in the background.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, these films have generally got a bit more sort of like urban graffiti flavor going on. And you had that, but it felt like... Maybe it's, I don't know, yeah, got a little bit of like 90s spice to it. Like maybe there's like a nightclub scene. I was reminded of Hellraiser 3. There's like the douchebag who runs a nightclub in it. And it feels like there's a very kind of similar character in this. Like I want slimy nightclub douchebags getting hooked and beed.
It's funny you should mention that it reminded you of Hellraiser 3, because it also reminded me of Hellraiser 2. Because there's that great shot in this of blood written on the wall with like a fingerprint that just says believe.
Yes.
Which made me think of the vastly superior scene from Hellraiser 2 with blood written on the wall saying, please help me, I am in hell.
That's a very good scene. I don't know what to expect from this. It just seems like Candyman's back. Everyone's saying Candyman. He's killing a bunch of people. I don't know.
It doesn't give a lot away, does it?
It keeps its bees close to its chest, this one.
Right the way inside there. But, Tom, I am all abuzz.
Yes?
To know what you might guess as the IMDb score for a film such as this. Mm. Now, just to recap, the original Candyman, Jeff Candyman's First Day at the Park from 1992, scored a whopping 6.7.
Hefty
for this kind of film. Probably should have scored higher, if you ask me. But still, you know, beggars can't be snoozers. Now, part two, Candyman, Farewell to the Flesh. Goodbye.
I guarantee it is a mediocre film.
Yeah, it was made 3 years later, and that got a 5.3.
Okay.
Now, this is 4 years later.
Oof.
What do you reckon Candyman 3, Day of the Dead, from 1999, scored on IMDb?
Well... I mean, I think it's going to go down. That this is the way of all things, you know. Everything leads to the grave. And they didn't make another one of these for quite some time. So, the more I think about it, the lower and lower I'm going in my head.
Well, don't overthink it, dude.
4.3.
It's 4 on the nosy.
Oh, ouchie wawa.
You could have overthought that a little bit more.
I probably should have, like all things in my life.
And you know, maybe this isn't going to be the film's fault. I just feel like 1999, did anything good happen at all? Probably not.
I hope that in this film, you know, The soundtrack on the trailer seemed to be a little bit more kind of like techno-y. I mean, just maybe they could throw in the song 1999 by Limp Bizkit for some reason. Why not?
Yeah. I just want a little bit of that, like,
like that. Something like that. That's just like, hey, you know what film, what music works really well in horror films? Metal. No, not particularly. Really. You know, it was really atmospheric techno. I mean, in a nightclub scene, I guess, but don't put it over the whole thing. Maybe they will.
Well, it's not like these films have form for using one piece of music again and again constantly over the whole thing, Tom. So I'm sure we will be absolutely fine.
Oh my God, can you imagine if it's just like techno playing, but it's still just playing Philip Glass going, ha, ha.
I hope so.
I hope so. Slather me in honey and let's have a look.
The screen's most brutal killer is back for blood.
They say he came back from the dead. His hand replaced by a bloody hook.
And revenge never tasted so sweet.
Believe. Candyman.
Who are you?
Your past, your present, your blood.
Artisan Entertainment presents Tony Todd.
Feel my pain.
And Donna DeErico.
It was the Candyman. He's real.
Candyman, Day of the Dead.
Help me.
Tom, did you know that one of the primary pieces of interesting IMDb trivia for Candyman 3 is this particular trivia fact?
Tell me.
Candyman 3 is the third film in the Candyman series.
Feels about right.
Okay. That's kind of the level that we're dealing with in terms of interesting things with this film.
Be my victim.
I mean, the only victim here is the Candyman franchise. Am I right?
Am I right, people?
It's not ideal. It's not great.
Now, that's not to say there aren't some things to enjoy in this movie.
Yeah. Because also not to say that it's... No, it's not good, though.
It's not good.
It's not good.
It's not good.
There's some, you know, there's some bits. There's some bits. There's some bobs. There's some bees.
Okay. Now, the bees are the best bits.
Absolutely. And we'll get to it. Hands down, the best bit of this film is a solitary bee.
One single bee. He's the MVP. He is the MVB.
Absolutely. But let's... start from the top to unpack what is Candyman Day of the Dad. Dead. I just want Candyman to go and have a word with his dad. Anyway. Or his father-in-law, right?
Hey.
Maybe they could have resolved some things. Anyway, we open with our hero. Yeah. She's the lady from Baywatch. Caroline.
Yeah. Caroline.
And she's having a spooky dream about a spooky bloody bath. And the way that it is filmed, it is obvious from the jump. This is a dream. It's not going to fake you out and be like, oh, it was all a dream. It's obvious it was a dream just
the
because
walls
of
the... are glowing white.
The door is like a fucking light. Everything, you know, like it's all spooky ooky. But I don't give a fuck. I don't care because I instantly know that it is a dream and I know nothing about this character. It is just this young woman in her pants. I know she was in Baywatch and that is why you've hired her to be boobs on legs. But is this young woman walking around and instantly it's gratuitous that she's just in these like tiny little pants and a little white vest and every single outfit that she wears is a little white vest in this film.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, it's a dream sequence. I don't know who this person is. We're going to see some random imagery and then we're going to cut to the titles. And that's exactly what happens.
Yeah. So she like goes in this glowing bathroom and she's like, oh my God, I can hear blood dripping. And then there's a close up of the tap with blood coming out of it. But then in all of the wide shots, there is no blood.
Yeah, and he's like, oh my God, this is so spooky. And
yeah, at first I was like, oh, is this like crazy dream logic where things don't make sense? And no, I just think they made it badly.
Yeah, I think so. It's just like, let's just do some random spooky shit and then we'll show the title of the film, and then we're going to play some trip hop and just have a lot of like sexy shots of a bloody hook spinning through darkness, which actually I kind of
like. Yeah, oh my God, it was like those Marks and Spencer's Christmas food advert,
yes.
Right? With like a spoon really slowly going into a yogurt and like a sexy voiceover being like, this isn't just any bloody stump with a hook impaled in it.
This one's got bees.
Yeah, it was, I didn't hate that bit.
No, I didn't mind it at all. Because also, like, I was kind of like, the trip-hop soundtrack isn't kind of what I was expecting, but, like, it kind of is working until the track went on for too long and it moved on from being atmospheric trip-hop into being, again, just a little bit too sexy.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's like, should I be aroused by this spinning hook in the darkness? Because, I don't know, show it to me for long enough, maybe. We'll see how the night takes us.
I think it's quite telling that all of the best scenes in this film are the scenes that have no people in.
Yeah.
So it's like the bee, the spinning hook.
And then after this, we go to Caroline. And it kind of transpires that she is the daughter that we saw at the end of Candyman 2.
Yeah.
Farewell to the Bees. And she, in this scene just launches it into her just telling some unseen person about, you know, how a Candyman works, like how a Candyman film works. And then we reveal that she's talking to her roommate, and her roommate's kind of like, but you don't believe in that. Come on, let's go to the mirror and try and say Candyman 5 times like we do in all the other films. And then we're going to get to 4, and then we're going to stop, and we're going to get scared. And she's like, well, you better go to the art gallery. I'm going to go to my acting class or whatever, my audition. Bye! And that's it. And I'm kind of like, what was that fucking scene? It was just like literally like an expo dump of what the Candyman is without really, it kind of introduced us to like the main character without introducing us to the main characters. Like, hey, do you remember like Candyman 2 from, when did Candyman 2 come out? Like,
1995.
Yeah. Do you remember like that film that came out 4 years ago? Yeah. It's the little girl from the end. I don't even think they say her name. We don't know anything about her other than she's like boobs in a white vest. She's got a roommate. I was getting very agitated very early on. With
I
just
know
like,
you were, buddy.
With, it was just kind of like, what is this scene?
I know.
What
I
is
know.
This scene?
Now, Tom, I've run the numbers. Yeah. And when I say I've run the numbers, I mean some other people on the internet ran the numbers and,
okay,
and
yeah.
I read them. Do you know what year this film is set in? This film from 1999.
Is it like set in like 2021 or something?
It's set in 2020.
Is it?
Yeah.
Because, fuck off. What?
Well, she's the little girl from the first one, which was released in 1995.
Yeah.
And she's an adult woman.
Adult lady.
In this.
Yes.
And if you run the maths for how old she apparently is, set in 2020. And at no point, you know, is anyone hoarding toilet paper?
Seems like she was having a better 20. Even with all the terrible things that happened to her, seemed like a better 2020, maybe. So we've cut from that scene of, like, just this conversation. There was just no context for why she was telling her friend about this. Was she having nightmares?
So she had that nightmare where she was in the bathroom. Tom, you've got to give her a break. Okay. She had that nightmare where she was in the bathroom and there was blood dripping, but not in the long shots. And then she was like, oh, I had this horrible dream last night. That's probably why you heard me shouting in my bedroom, because we're roommates, remember?
Oh, yeah.
And that's our pre-established backstory. And you're an actor because you've got to go to your audition. And I apparently have something to do with art. Got to go do this art thing. Bye!
I'm off to a Mexican area of LA so that someone can explain what Day of the Dead is, because Day of the Dead is the title of the film that does not feature very prominently in the film. But we just thought it would be a cool thing.
Sounds spooky ooky.
Exactly. She's walking down the street and there's this kid being like, hey, buy a sugar skull. It's Day of the Dead. And this guy with a big moustache and a big cigar says, that's right, it is Day of the Dead. Bye, I might appear later in the film.
He says, I like to take a bite out of death.
Which is a cool line. And then we go to the art gallery?
Yeah. Now, I've got some stuff to say about this art gallery,
I mean, there's
brother,
plenty,
man.
There's plenty to say about the art gallery.
Man, this art gallery. Now, I've been to some galleries. I don't want to brag. I've not been to loads, but I've been to some. I've looked at a painting, I've stroked my chin, I've nodded, I've, you know, taken a step back and gone, huh.
Huh, it's a picture of an apple, but is it really of an apple?
Yeah.
Is that what it's really about?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I've never been to one that's quite like this. So it's like run by this like slightly sketchy kind of like fake it till you make it sort of guy who's like, hey, I gotta promote my art gallery.
Yeah. Miguel, the art gallery owner, yeah.
And the exhibition is an exhibition of the paintings of Daniel Robitaille, who became the Candyman. But he's promoting it as the works of the Candyman. And there's like a big blood splatter, like, sign in the window, and he's like, oh yeah, we're gonna get in all the people off the street. But the thing is that these are like 100-year-old paintings, so they're just like these quite dry oil paintings,
yeah,
of like, you know, people 100 years ago, yeah, wearing dresses.
He's on the
shit.
Phone like, wait till you see this shit, man, it's gonna blow your mind. It's like this guy in a suit just standing there, and there's like a portrait of a woman, and she's just like just this woman you don't know. Wow.
Yeah, wow. And because of all of this like salacious marketing, it pulls in all of these weird street goths who have got like wallet chains coming from their nose to their lip, and you know, and people with tattoos all over their faces, and they're all like, they're going like, far out, man.
But it's the split in this gallery is, it's like half of it is these people who are on their way to the Marilyn Manson concert, and then half of it is just like, just some old dudes like chomping on cigars or whatever. And like, it seems like Caroline, the ancestor of the Candyman, has kind of acquired all of his artwork and is putting on this gallery with her, this exhibition with her friend Miguel, to kind of clear the Candyman's, to be like, look, he was a good guy. He could do a painting, right? Like, yeah, he's not a monster.
No one.
And then he's kind of like, he's a monster. This is going to sell like gangbusters.
Like, no one that could do a painting could ever be a bad man.
No, couldn't even think of one. Anyway, and then she's like, has this big blowout with him. He's like, no, you're completely like, you're selling out like my great-great-great-grandfather's like legacy. I'm not going to be any part of this, you know. And he's like, no, okay, I'll respect the dead. Hey, it's Day of the Dead. I'll respect the dead. I'm not going to like cheapen this, even though I already have. And then in the middle of the gallery, he just stops the whole thing of everyone looking just to be like, hey, let's do another recap on what the Candyman is. I've put a mirror up here so that everyone can like look in the mirror and say Candyman 5 times. I've paid an actor to jump out and pretend to be a Candyman psychopath and kill people. And he's just completely playing up to the whole thing that, like, he's a murderous, evil monster. And she just stands there and just watches.
Yeah.
And is just kind of like, I'll let him finish.
Let's see where he's going with this. Incidentally, that actor that he pays to jump out and is like, he's gonna kill you all. He's like pretending to be this Candyman fanatic. He'll get you. He'll come for you all. Tom, I believe you discovered that this gentleman has been on the podcast before in Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yes, I think the guy who plays David, the actor, was the guy who plays the kind of the greaser boyfriend in Nightmare on Elm Street, who gets arrested and then killed in the police cells. I believe that might be him. So there you go. Good, nice.
Good little linkage there.
Good little linkage. Anyway, so during the gallery, Miguel, being this kind, supportive friend, gets Caroline to say Candyman 5 times in a mirror in front of people just to kind of like, you know, promote the show.
The show and that they're already at.
Yeah, and it's kind of like, well, I mean, that's, we've seen two of these films already. I've got a good idea where this is going to go. Nothing happens immediately, obviously. But then Miguel is kind of like, I'm going to go back with this hot piece back to my ginormous palatial downtown LA art gallery owner type pad or whatever.
Yeah.
Nothing bad will happen. It's fine.
Miguel's deal I find really hard to like get to grips with, because he's just like, hey, I'm just like a rough and tumble guy from the streets.
Yeah. Well, he's getting harassed by two very, very racist cops.
Yeah.
They show up and harass him at the gallery. And
but literally based on nothing. They're just there and they're just like,
we don't like you because you're Mexican, basically.
Yeah.
It's pretty full on, like, how kind of racist these guys are.
Mm-hmm.
So while Miguel goes off to hook up at his bachelor pad where nothing bad's going to happen, Caroline goes and catches the subway in LA, which just looks like a hellscape. And there she meets the Candyman. He floats through the tunnel on a swarm of bees, which is
this
cool.
This is amazing. It's like, imagine, like, you know how like the Silver Surfer, but like it's bees.
Yes, it's like that, or like you know, like Monkey in, like, was it Journey to the West, like would float around on a little cloud.
Yeah.
Little cloud of bees.
Little cloud of bees.
Little cloud of bees.
That is good. And he just pops up and is like, hello.
I'm the Candyman.
Hello. It's me.
I've been working on my entrance. It's pretty good.
What you think? Get it good? Anyway, bye. And then she wakes up and she's on a bench outside Miguel's house.
Yeah.
And it's the day. And she's apparently slept on this bench all night. And her hair is immaculate.
Oh, she looks beautiful. I guess he kind of like shows up and is kind of like, hey, remember that thing from the last film about how I'm going to show up and be like, you don't believe in me. I want to kill all members of my family. And we're doing that again. He's kind of like got a beef about her being like the Candyman. She's not denying the existence of Daniel Robitaille. She's like denying this. It's like, he's not a murderous monster. He was just a good guy who did some painting and something terrible happened to him. So she's kind of actually trying to like paint quite a sort of...
Mm-hmm.
him as a tragic figure, and he's kind of showing up being like, no, I kill people, and I really don't appreciate you, like, you know, sort of bringing down my brand. I am a murderer, and one of the things I really love doing, because I was wronged, I love murdering my family. For some reason, I want all of my family to die.
Now, I'm kind of half with the filmmakers on this, because it is established in the first film that he needs people to be afraid of him in order to keep existing.
Yes.
So it's in his interest, and this film goes on to kind of even underline this point and prove it as the plot goes on. It's in his interest for people to think he's a murderer, even if he's not, right?
Yeah.
So he wouldn't like someone clearing his name, necessarily.
Yeah.
Because he needs people to be afraid of him so that they can keep telling these stories and he can live on in infamy.
Okay, yes, that's true.
That's true. So I get why he's like, no, stop trying to tell people that I'm not a bad man.
I'm really bad.
I'm really bad. Honest, I am. I'm just so
it's
bad.
Like, it's like, I had a tragic death, but I've really just been being a real wrong'un since then, right?
Yeah. So I completely understand that, but I don't get this continuous thing that he's had since movie two, where he's just like, oh, sorry, oh, we're related. All right, cool. Let me just absolutely torment you specifically.
Yeah, right?
Like, why does he care so much about, like, ferreting out his own bloodline? Couldn't it just be anybody?
Well, that's why the first film made sense, because it was somebody kind of, like, demystifying him. It doesn't make sense that it's someone from his own family, because it just feels like, I don't know, like, they are a descendant of his bloodline.
Yeah.
Of the love between him and, you know, his lover, like the... Anyway, I don't get it.
And we'll get onto this a little bit more later, but, like, the thing that made... Part of what made the first movie so powerful was this, like, seductive pull that he had over Virginia Madsen's character, where he was sort of, like, slowly drawing her in with this idea of living forever with him, and he had this very sort of Dracula-esque, hypnotic, seductive pull.
Yeah.
He's pulling that same shit on his great-great-granddaughter, and it is creepy, and not in the kind of creepy way that I like horror movies to be.
Yeah.
It's a totally different kind of creepy.
Yeah, not a fan of that. So anyway, she goes in to see Miguel. She's like, for some reason, I met my ghost grandpa. I'm now outside Miguel's house. I'll go in and see how he's doing. It hasn't gone well for Miguel. I'll tell you that much.
He's struck out.
Yeah, she walks through his apartment and has these weird flashbacks. Well, it's hard to tell whether or not she is seeing these things, or this is just like the filmmakers lazily being like, oh, how do we fill her in, the audience in on what happened to Miguel? We'll just do flashbacks to things that happened. I don't know how we're quite meant to read that, but like, Miguel is basically there, like, smoking some weed, and this woman is basically smearing herself with honeycomb.
Yeah, like, so it's not just honey from the jar. She's got a whole lump of honeycomb, and she's naked, and she's like rubbing it over her front. Like,
yeah.
It's, and it, you know, they're acting like it's this very seductive thing, and Miguel like watches this and is like,
oh, oh bloody hell, yeah, that's gonna be so sticky.
Yeah. Well, me and Tom were just watching it and we were just getting like, bleh. No, you'd need so many like wipes.
Yeah, it's gonna be so sticky. Oh, don't get under your sheet. Oh, fuck you, animal. How much money does your gallery make? And then they go up several flights of stairs, and they're, because apparently it's like he lives in an office building, I don't know. And they go to his little bedroom, and then she gets absolutely swarmed with bees, and he gets hooked through the stomach. And it's pretty good, like, as a kind of like a Candyman kill. They're dead. And then she comes in and finds all that.
Yeah.
And then the police are called.
And
this sets off the thing. It's like, are we doing this again? Are we doing the Candyman thing where the Candyman is going to torment this woman, and everybody's going to gradually think that she's the one doing all the killings? Because we've done that for two films. Could we do something else now?
Yeah. But no, apparently this is...
No, we're going to do this. Let's stick with it.
So there's a detective there to investigate Miguel and the model's murder. And he is played by an actor called Ernie Hudson Jr. Now, we do not know for certain, but I think it's fairly safe to assume that Ernie Hudson Jr. is related to Ernie Hudson, who was one of the original Ghostbusters, which is kind of cool, right?
Yeah, that's all right. That's all right. He's not in this film very much, but he shows up. And
they're there to... It's not just the murder. It's also a part of an ongoing investigation, because all of the paintings from the gallery... They've been stolen.
Oh,
not the paintings, not Tom.
We need those paintings. So yes, a bunch of stuff is introduced here. Ernie Hudson Jr. He's like, hey, I'm not like those racist cops who are also going to keep on showing up. I'm like, I'm all right, I guess. And then, yes, we've got the paintings have been stolen. And we've also got that the actor who showed up at the gallery with a hook and was like, I'm being paid to be crazy. The cops think that, you know, they want to see him. They think that he's probably the one that did it because he showed up. They don't know that it was a stunt.
Yeah.
Bunch of stuff going on. And then we're going to have Caroline. She's going to go back home. She's going to cry in the bath hysterically. And she's going to have a flashback to finding her mother dead in the bath with her throat slit.
Yeah.
And so, oh, was that something from the opening dream sequence? I don't know. Anyway, and then we're going to cut away from that. Okay, We're just throwing imagery at the screen, apparently, at this point.
Yeah, there's a good little shot where there is a light bulb that is switched on with a single bee inside that light bulb. I quite like this. The other day I was at a train station, Tom, and I looked down and there's the little ticket machine where you put your ticket in with a little glass screen inside it. And there was a massive spider, absolutely enormous, completely alive and moving around, inside the ticket machine, like behind the glass screen. So it must have gotten in there when it was tiny and now be too big to leave, and it just lives its whole little life inside that ticket machine.
That's ooky.
I think about that spider a lot.
I bet.
Yeah. So this little bee in a bulb was sort of, it brought up similar things for me. Yeah, and so, you know, she's kind of like hanging out and she's having these memory flashbacks of finding her mum dead, and
the mum wanted to destroy the myth of the Candyman. It was like she was still haunted by it, and she was saying to her daughter, you have to destroy the myth, otherwise, you know, we'll always be haunted by this. We also get some stuff where Caroline's roommate, we get this good fake out. Where Caroline's going home and she hears all this screaming in the hall and she's like, oh my God, it's the Candyman's killing my roommate. And she's struggling to get in the front door and she gets in and her roommates are just screaming on her own. She's like, I got the part! Yay! Which is actually quite a good funny fake out.
Yep.
And then she's like, but now I've got to move away for a bit to go and do my acting that I do somewhere not in LA, which is where they're already living. Anyway, she's going away somewhere. So Caroline is left alone and even more vulnerable.
Yeah. And then she meets up with David, the other actor who was, you know, the guy that's under suspicion because he was paid to be there waving a hook around and acting all crazy. And the cops think that he was definitely involved with this murder and the stealing of the paintings. because reasons, and because of other reasons, he has heard that there's a local gang that have really stolen the paintings.
Yeah.
And so him and Caroline go on the hunt.
We're looking for a gang now.
For this gang, so that I guess they can just go up to them and be like, did you do it? And they'll go, oh, yeah, fair enough.
All right, yeah. 100-year-old paintings or whatever.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, so they're on the hunt for this gang, and they go past a big shed that's got, like, some Candyman graffiti on it.
Yeah.
Not as good as the graffiti from the first film.
No. And Caroline's kind of freaked out, and Dave's like, oh, no, don't worry. Like, it's like, Miguel just paid for, like, some local taggers to put that up to, like, promote the art show. It is painted on a local spot of evil, though.
You know how every neighbourhood just has, like, a spot of evil?
Yeah, like, you know, every neighbourhood has an evil corrugated iron shed.
Yeah, or, like, you know, that place where it's like, oh, it's always a restaurant and they never open very long. They always go out of business.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing.
It's like that. Anyway, I'm sure we won't go back there later on. Actually, no, we do. We just keep on showing just random clips of this. Now we've established evil sheds. Every now and then, there'll just be a shot of the evil shed with the Candyman saying some spooky shit over the top that has no relation to the story.
And we kind of get a lot of this. So yeah. They're asking around about the gang, and they go to this bar, and there's the cool guy whose name's Tino from the start of the film, the guy that, like, bought the sugar skull and was like, I like to take a bite out of death. Turns out that he's like a local kind of crimey guy of some indeterminate.
He's a local guy.
He's a local guy who's like maybe a bit dodgy, but also not necessarily a bad guy.
He's going to look into the gang.
He's going to pull some strings, look into the gang.
We go to David's house.
Yeah, he's like, there's someone I want you to meet. Because she has another vision of the Candyman where she goes to use the sink in the bar. And the sink gets, like, instead of water, it's blood. Oh, no. And she gets a bit on her face and she's like, icky. Oh, wash it off. Oh, no, it's more blood. Oh, no.
The hand dryer's full of bees.
The hand dryer's full of bees. She freaks out. David, the actor, comes in and is like, there's someone you gotta meet. You gotta come with me to the creepy waiting room of doom. And that's where they go, baby.
And the creepy waiting room of doom is to go and see his grandma.
His grandma, yeah. And it's quite interesting because he's like, so his grandma is like this kind of fortune teller type lady, this old.
Yeah, local healer. Yeah.
And he's like, hey, this, you, Caroline, this is my abuela, which as far as I understand, abuela is grandma, right, in
yeah,
Spanish?
Yeah, I think so.
For the rest of the film, she, like, Caroline calls her abuela like that's her name.
Yes, yeah. Well, that's the only name she's got to go on, I guess.
Just felt a bit weird.
Yeah, a little bit weird.
Like, if I met your grandma,
just kept her calling her grandma.
I wouldn't also call her my grandma from then on.
Yep, yeah, that's fair, yeah. Yeah, it is a bit weird, but, like, yeah, she's going to go, abuela, abuela! anyway, she goes and sees abuela, and she's like, kind of like, oh, she's a local healer, she'll do a thing, she can communicate with the spirits. And she's like, I don't think so. It's like, you're a bit worried about your spooky great-great-granddad who's made out of bees coming to kill you. What, this is too weird for you? Right? Like, oh, this is kooky. Like,
and it is quite kooky, because this is about when the abuela... Yeah. Gets the egg out.
Oh, the fucking egg.
The fucking egg. Now, Tom, can we agree that the egg was the highlight of the film?
Candyman 3, top highlight.
Day of the egg.
Egg. Day of the egg. Eggs for breakfast, baby. Grandma is doing this kind of ritual, and, like, and she gets this egg out, and she's like, speak the name of the evil to the egg.
Speak it to the egg.
And she's like, Candyman. It's like, yeah. And I'm like, this egg's going to be full of fucking bees. You wait, Todd. Just wait. You're going to crack that egg open and there are going to be so many bees in that fucking egg. And she cracks the egg open and it's an egg. Yeah.
It's just an egg. And at this point, I was really genuinely worried that you were going to insist that we turn the film off. Because you were so adamant that the egg had to have a bee in it.
I've never been so sure of anything in my whole life. It's like, this is Chekhov's egg. It's full of bees.
But she cracks it, it's just an egg.
It's just an egg.
And it's got that little red fleck in it that sometimes eggs have in the yolk, you know?
Yeah.
The little red fleck.
And then David and Abuela go out of the room. Maybe David's got a young daughter, so maybe they go out to see her. And then she's just in the room with the egg, and she sits down and has a pulls up a chair. Just, I'm gonna have a good look at this egg.
You know how it is when it's you and your egg.
You pull the chair up. Let's have a look. Me and this egg have got some one-on-one time. And she's looking at the egg, and there's that little red dot, and then it gets bigger. And then like it actually starts to kind of like pour blood.
Egg is bleeding.
The egg is bleeding.
And just to be clear, guys, this is a cracked raw egg. So the yolk is like all golden and then the white is all like still
translucent. Yeah.
And it's really gloopy when it's like bleeding and grim.
And it looks really like we were kind of like, how have they done this? Have they kind of like, you know, like pierced, like got a syringe through the table, through the plate, into the egg and they're
But then how do they do that without breaking the yolk? I don't understand.
I don't know. But they do that and then you're like, oh, this is gold, it's slowly bleeding, and then they go in the close up and then a fucking bee crawls its way out of the egg. And I think at this point, if you look at it, like the texture of the yolk looks a little bit like maybe it's more cooked, I guess. Maybe they've poached it. I don't know what they've done. They've cured it somehow. But like this like gloopy, there's like this blood that goes bloop. And then this bee crawls out of the yolk and all the blood kind of trails out after it. And it's just super cool.
It's so good.
It's cool because I'm kind of like, how did they do it? How did they get a bee out of an egg?
Seems so very simple and yet so mystifying.
Also very cool and spooky and like the most kind of like artistic thing that is in this film, right? Like it's kind of like this is something that someone's thought about, because it doesn't feel like anyone's thought about a lot in this film.
Yeah.
But someone really thought about getting a bee out of this egg. And
From now on, I think I'm going to swap. I'm not going to be a sunny side up guy. I'm going to, next time someone's like, how do you want your eggs? I'm just going to say, bees!
Yes, please, bees. Cut to the random shed saying some shit after this, completely ruining the moment. After that...
we want to dwell on the bee egg!
After that, I think we maybe get some like flashbacks of like the Candyman having sex with his lady.
Yeah, there's a bit of that, and then it's like intercut with David, the actor, takes Caroline back to her place, and she's like, "No, please stay.
Stay.
My flatmate's gone still, and you've got to stay and keep me company." He's like, "All right, fine. What I'm going to do is I'm going to light some terrifying candles, and we're going to sit in the dark, and we're just going to pound tequila shots continuously,
and then we're going to pound something else.
Then
I'll tell you what.
Pound something else.
There's this bit where." David, they've gone to bed, and David is on top of Caroline, and then he kind of like shuffles down. He's literally going down, and he's got his like he's sticking his finger, not very sexily, in her mouth. He's just like just sticking it in, like you would stick a soldier of toast
into
your boiled bee egg. And but then the hand dips away, and then up comes Tony Todd's hand, and then he's going, sticking his fingers in her mouth. And then he pops up, and he is nose to nose, lips to lips with her, just being like, hey.
I'm your great-great-granddad.
I'm your great-great-grand. You thought that your new boyfriend was going down on you, but hey, it's your grandparents. Yeah, this is the point where like, I don't like where this is going.
And neither does she.
I mean, and with good reason.
Because she screams and screams, and then she wakes up and it was all a spooky dream, and David's not there, but her flatmate is. And her flatmate's like, what are you screaming about? And she's like, where's David? And her flatmate's, who I think is called Tara, maybe. Mm. She's like, there's no David here, it's just us. And it looks like you've pounded an entire bottle of tequila by yourself. Like, chill out, let's make you some coffee. And then Candyman shows up for real and kills Tara. And it's like quite nasty.
Yeah, they really hone in on her face as she's kind of getting gored.
Well, yeah, it made me think of in the first film, she has her good friend gets killed and we don't see it. We only hear it. And I feel like that was a heavy influence on this bit, only we do also see it.
Yes, it is. Yeah, very much so.
And it's nasty.
I know. And then Candyman, like, picks up the dead friend and just, like, plonks her in Caroline's arms. And then the police show up. The racist cops show up and they're like, we're taking you downtown. And they stick her in a car. So there's two cops. There's like the main villain cop and a kind of henchman villain cop. And she's in the car with henchman villain cop. And he's going on about how they've done a background check on her. And the New Orleans PD were like, you know, filling them in on how the whole family was obsessed with Candyman. All this kind of stuff. And he's looking at her in the rearview mirror. And then he's like, oh, shit. Oh, my God. And she's like, what? What was like? And he's like, where?
Just kidding.
This is absolutely roasting her. And then he gets hooked through the mouth. And it's just like, oh, shit.
This is quite good. Yeah, so he's like just being a huge dick and like... It's quite an intense performance. So at first he's just laughing his ass off, like, you're all crazy. We know you're all crazy.
Are you okay?
It's just so intense. And then he's like, oh my God, because then the Candyman is like putting the hook like through his mouth at the back of his neck, at the back of his like head. So she's in the back seat and she sees the hook come through the car seat headrest and like spurting blood everywhere. But the blood also somehow apparently shoots out the front all over the windscreen.
How did that happen?
And then Candyman peeps up from the footwell. He was in like down by the pedals, just like hee hee hee.
Exactly. They'll never believe you. Throws her some car keys so she can let herself out of the car. And the only way she can get out of the car is to climb over the dead cop. And when she does, he like opens his eyes and tries to strangle her. It's like, how does that fucking work? Anyway, she gets away and she goes back to see Abuela.
Yeah, and this is amazing. She's like knocking on the door like, Abuela, 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 you gotta let me in, you gotta let me in, Abuela. And she's like, she's stolen the cop's jacket and she's covered in blood and... Knock, 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 knock. And Abuela opens the door and is like, okay, what do you want? And the first words out of Caroline's mouth are, can I use your bathroom? Which to me was just like, oh, she wasn't really in that much of a hurry. She just really needed to pee.
Yeah.
She's like, let me in, let me.
I haven't peed since my best friend got murdered. Anyway.
So she goes to the bathroom and to like wash the blood off.
Yeah. And then there's a bit of a thing where I don't really know what she really has to say to Abuela, but then we get a kind of a bit of a riff on the scene in the second film where you had the kind of the big spooky parade and Candyman popping up. And we get that again. There's like a Day of the Dead parade and Candyman's popped up and he's waving his arms around being like, be my victim, my victim.
And then the worst of the two cops, the one that's not dead, he's like waving his gun around and he's like, I'm gonna kill her, I'm gonna kill her. And then Ernie Hudson Jr. shows up and like punches him in the face. The big bad racist cop gets kicked off the force.
Which is good stuff. Caroline's going to go and she's found out where the gang is that has stolen the Candyman's paintings. So she goes to this spooky warehouse and just, oh my God, the most 1999 people are there. It's like a gang of Candyman worshipping goths. So in the gallery there, at the beginning, there were some goths like this, with this guy with like a big wallet chain hanging from his nose and all this kind of stuff. And they're like, yeah, the Candyman, he's the way. And like the guy, this one guy with the nose chain, he's like,
we had an epiphany at the gallery. His myth called to us, a reflection of the evil that created him.
And it's like, this guy talks like when you're 6 and you're playing with action figures. And then, you know, like you get like Skeletor out or whatever, or the Shredder or like whatever villain, and you're like, yeah, I'm gonna get you. I'm your big scary guy. And that is what this guy sounds like. It is like the least convincing thing. And I'm absolutely here for it. And he's like, yes, the Candyman. God, Candyman, I'm going to look in this mirror and I'm going to say Candyman 5 times and they're all going to fucking die.
It's amazing because, as you have alluded to, this guy has a massive chain that connects his nostril to his lip. And the first thing the Candyman does when he shows up is use his hook to rip the chain out.
That's going
to
come out. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely beautiful.
So during this, Caroline is like tied to a chair with a ball gag in her mouth. And you just know that Candyman is massacring this gang. It's just a long shot on her kind of like screaming and just lots of like gory sound effects and stuff. But there was a part of me was just hoping like, man, it would be a real kind of like change of pace if Candyman showed up and you just had like something that was like, even just like one long shot of Candyman just fucking rinsing this gang.
Yeah.
Like, that would be quite an interesting, you know, like, but instead it's left to the imagination and all of that. But like, part of me just wanted to see like, man, I want to see Candyman like take on like a gang of 10 people and actually see what that looks like. But we don't.
We don't get to see that, no. Instead, so she like blacks out for a bit and she has like a vision of her mum being like, she's happy and she's alive, like her mum is alive again and she's happy with Candyman. And this is quite a creepy bit where Candyman then like really slowly slits the mum's throat, but all the way through the mum is like super stoked with it. She's like, yeah, this is fine. I'm into this. This is good.
It's the Candyman sales pitch. It's like, let me murder you. It's not that bad, I guess. Come to my spooky shed. And so she finally goes to the spooky shed, the local place of evil that every neighborhood has. It looks like a small shed. It's as big as a warehouse. It's full of fucking bones and bees and all kinds of shit. David is hanging from 2 hooks. Just like he's been there bleeding for days. He's covered in bees. It's full of the paintings of Daniel Robitaille. They're just like knocking about.
Yep.
Caroline's got a hook.
Yep.
She's grabbed a hook off of the crazy Candyman gang because like the leader with the wallet chain was like had his own hook. She's like, I'm gonna hook this mother. It's gonna be hook on hook action.
Yeah. And so the important thing that's happened here is I think it was the abuela was like, evil cannot exist without good. The two are in opposites.
Yeah.
And she's like, okay, fine, maybe, fine. But she's like, but what you must do is if you destroy good, you also destroy evil.
Yeah.
Huh.
You must find the good in him.
You must find the good in him. And so Caroline is like, oh, I get it. You're saying I have to destroy his paintings, the only good thing he ever did. And that's how I can destroy the evil in him as well. Of course, it seems so obvious now. So she's got this hook and like Candyman's there and he gives her a very uncomfortable great granddad snog. You know, like when you have to snog your great granddad and his mouth is full of bees?
It's like that.
You know that feeling? It's like, oh, granddad, you're full of bees.
It is weird that before this, like Candyman is like appearing, like he'll appear in front of her and then behind her and he can appear, he can sort of like teleport wherever he needs to be. And he's like, come to me. Kiss me full of bees. Be with me. I choose you. And she goes and gives him an uncomfortable snog. And he's like, my mouth's full of bees now for some reason. And then she's like, I'm going to walk over here and I'm going to destroy the painting of you that's over here. And for some reason at this point, he's like, nope, don't go over there. Don't go near that. Do not, young lady, I'm your granddad and I have kissed you. Do not go near that painting. Stop going near that painting. And for some reason, he cannot move at this point. He's been able to magically teleport and do, like, literally whatever the fuck he wants. He can command clouds of bees. At this point, he is just like, I mean, if that's what you're going to do, I guess I just have to go with that. But I am very disappointed, young lady. Would it help if I flash to you and show my rotting torso covered in bees? Nope. Okay, you're going to do your thing.
I see your mind is made up, absolutely.
And she, Portrait of Dorian Gray's the shit out of that painting, and it kills him.
It kills him in a big CGI flash of pixels.
And I don't know this whole thing that, like, she was kind of, like, trying to make out. Like, he's a good man, right? He was a good man. Let's stop making him into a baddie. And in this, it's like, the good is in his painting. And is it the good, like, that's a picture of who he was before he was tortured and became evil? Or is it literally just like, no, we're just doing it on merit of his art? Because all of his paintings are photorealistic in this thing.
They are literally photos, yeah. It doesn't make a huge amount of sense, but I think what is the nail in the coffin is the scene that follows. Mm. So the bad racist cop who got kicked off the force after being punched by Ernie Hudson, he turns up and now he's got a hook as well. And he's like, I don't know how I found you here, apparently, but the screenwriters wanted me to be here, so I guess that's where I am. Why? I hate you so much. I've been kicked off the force and I got this hook. And he's like, I'm going to kill you. Maybe I'm the Candyman. And he's going to kill her. And then Ernie Hudson Jr. pops up, shoots him in the back of the head. He's like, I don't know how I got here. I guess the screenwriters needed me to be here. But bang, he's dead. And then Caroline is like, phew, he's dead. And then she gets a vision of her dead mum. And her dead mum just says, you must destroy the myth. And Ernie Hudson Jr. is like, what was the deal with the big bad racist cop? And Caroline says, oh, he was the Candyman all along. Thereby destroying the myth, because now that everyone thinks that it was him and now that he is dead, she's like, the Candyman is never coming back again. That's it for good. No more Candyman. Off to enjoy my life with bees.
Or without bees, I guess, in this case.
Hey, however she likes it.
Yeah, we don't know what she gets up to. But that's kind of it. There's one last, like, jump scare dream sequence that means nothing.
Yeah, she falls asleep, yes. And there's like a bit where there's
a mirror
that smashes, yeah. And then she wakes up in the cemetery. She falls asleep in a lot of weird places, but she wakes up, she's in the cemetery, it's Day of the Dead. She's there with David the actor and his daughter, and they are having a picnic on her mum's grave.
Yes. Which was the whole thing that David had told her about Day of the Dead, and it's celebrating the dead, and said it was something that she could never do. So it's like she's at peace with her family history. La-di-da, end of the film, end of the franchise for many a year.
And yeah, we end with some sort of fairly weak, phony baloney, faux Philip Glass music, and which after a little bit, even they get bored of that, they fade it out.
Go back to the trip hop.
Get the trip hop back, it's all right.
And it, so I mean, like, the problems I think with this film is, I think, like, the third film, it being like, okay, the Candyman has been summoned and is just gonna sort of like torment this one person, and people are gonna think that they are a murderer. I don't know, three films of that just feels,
yeah, it's almost like, usually these films, I think, these sequels, they go wrong by, like, straying too far from the source material. And with this franchise, is this a rare instance where it's like they're not straying far enough?
Yeah, where it's like, right, it's in a different city, but, I mean, who cares? Like, there's a lot of things in this one and the second one that feels similar.
And the first one.
And I think the thing about this, like, I just really, like, really fucked me off in, like, the first, like, five or six scenes is we're introduced to this character, and there's, like, really, like, nothing in the way of, like, any character development or anything. I'll be like, oh, it's the girl from the second one. Remember her? Yeah, right. Okay. Yeah. Jog on. And whereas the first one with Virginia Madsen, you'd, like, you know, you kind of knew who she was. You knew what she was after. She wasn't connected. I think this whole thing of being connected to Daniel Robitaille, the character, and his lineage just kind of means, like, well, that's all they are. They're just, like, another person on the family tree. Whereas, like, Virginia Madsen's character, she was, like, you know, like, doing her, like, her PhD with her friend. She had her husband, and she knew her husband was probably fucking around. There was other stuff going on with that character other than just the Candyman. Yeah. And in this, like, literally the first thing we hear this character saying is, like, let me tell you all about the Candyman. Blah, blah, blah. He's my relative. And that's all she is?
Yeah.
And
yeah, that is, and you know, even like
she has one friend, and like Miguel. At the beginning, I thought, like, is Miguel the boyfriend? Miguel's not even the boyfriend. It's just like.
And even when she's done telling her one friend about the Candyman, she's like, right, off to go to my day job now, trying to sell the Candyman's paintings, I guess. Yep. But I don't want anyone to look at them or think about him. Not too much. Not in the wrong way. But look at the paintings, but don't anybody talk about them.
Right? It's like, look, I just want this completely unknown society painter to just be, you know, to be revered. Like, for no... that just kind of...
You don't need that. I think there's enough built-in stuff. Like, the Candyman can come... The point is that he lives in the stories that people are telling, and he can
exactly.
come to anyone if you play the game wrong and you say the name and you do all of that business.
Yeah, and I just feel that, like, also, like, it worked with Virginia Madsen being this outsider that he's like, I want you to submit to me and let me kill you so that my legacy can endure... I don't know, something about it being like it's with his own family. I just don't really understand, like,
it's odd, isn't it?
I feel like if he loved his lover so much, why does he want to destroy his bloodline?
Mm.
Why does he want to kill the people that are, you know, basically come from his, it's like from his progeny? Because it's like, that's what his, you know, his would-be father-in-law wanted to do was to kind of like, was to erase that.
I think the idea is that the people he kills live with him for eternity.
Yes.
And so he wants his family there with him.
Well, then I want to see that, right? Like, you know, maybe a glimpse of what that actually means, rather than it just being kind of like this vague, like, well, you'll just live with me and him for me, I guess. I mean,
yeah,
you want to see, like, Virginia Madsen at the end of the first one, where she's...
Yes, I want to know a bit more of, like, what his life is like, I suppose, because, like, he pulls his coat open and his chest is rotted away and he's full of bees, right?
Yeah.
But he seems quite happy about it.
Exactly.
He seems quite happy about it. He's like, live, like, you know, anytime there's like any chance of people are going to stop talking about me and I'll stop living forever, if my chest was rotting and full of bees, I'd be like, yeah, that's fine. I'm done being bee chest boy.
Exactly.
But he's like, no, he wants to hold on to that. So he loves it. He loves it.
It's, yeah. And I think we'll
he's mad for it.
He is. He's, it's a bonanza for him. Well, now what we've got to do is go and see what happens in the reboot, remake. I don't know if it's kind of like a soft reboot, like if there is some continuity with the original film. I don't know much about the new one that's only just come out.
I purposefully avoided reading too much about it just because I didn't want spoilers. I think someone told me, and listeners, if you know, you're probably going to be screaming at your headphones at me getting it wrong. I might be wrong. I think this is a sequel to the first film that ignores the other sequels, but confusingly is also just called Candyman.
That seems to be a thing that people like doing these days.
There's been some other stuff going on. Interesting for me, obviously, assuming that the new Candyman is set in the year that it is released, that means it is set only 1 year after Candyman 3.
Okay, that's good. Well, we'll see if that plays in. But I'm looking forward to seeing like a new take on this. And only three films in, and I mean, this film isn't the worst film I've ever seen by a long stretch. But it feels like, yeah, this one kind of like just like runs this franchise into the ground a little bit. I can see why no one really wanted, like, they could have done, but they just would have ended up making Hellraiser sequels where it's like, we took a detective film, we stick the Candyman in it,
yeah.
or whatever. It feels like there's not much more to say, so I hope there is something new and interesting to say in the new one.
Yeah, I think so, and like I want to see a little bit more of that like dangerous tone that you know, we talked about when we watched the first one, and
yep.
you know, I was talking about when I first saw it as a youngster.
Yeah,
it felt so sort of transgressive and frightening that it even existed.
Yeah.
I'm a big boy now, so I don't think it's going to quite scare me. It's quite on the same level, but I want it to feel a little. I want it to like brush up against that, like
yeah,
that nastiness.
Well, tune in next time for that, won't you please?
Won't you please? I beg
good bees of the of podcast land.
Please.
Be my listener. Very good.
And so until then, I'm Todd Jordan.
I'm Tom Denny. Buzz, 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 honey, whatever. I don't know.
How bees. Do you like your eggs?
Oh, I like full of bees. I get... Oh, fucking hell.
We'll keep the riff going.
Keep the riff
bee,
going.
Bee eggs.
Yeah. Eggs. I'll have an eggs bean addict, please.
That was worth it. All right.